Welcome in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. He'll join us at 7:30 to get into the latest with the Tennessee Volunteers. Matt Duchesne, Predator Centerman, will join us at 9 o'clock as he does each and every Wednesday at 9 o'clock, brought to you by Two Rivers Ford and Gary Ashton Remax Advantage. So looking forward to that conversation with Matt Duchesne. And then Adam Vingan from The Athletic at 9:30. So a lot still to get to today here on the show. But, Joe, it's time to talk a little Tennessee Titans football. And obviously you look at the coaching staff right now, and there are some holes to fill. Arthur Smith is out the door. He is the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Incredible press conference yesterday, and him like recording the selfie video. He looked very uncomfortable doing so. It was funny to watch. just the difference in going from coordinator, where you got to talk like once a week, to what's about to happen to him and having to talk every day. I am very much looking forward to.
Yeah, poor guy. Not his bag, man.
It is going to be something. But obviously that leaves a hole on the offensive coordinator staff. For the Titans, you got to fill that. And then defensively, we all know, we've talked about it a lot this year with the Titans, it was a train wreck. And you would hope that Mike Vrabel is going to bring in a named defensive coordinator this upcoming season. So, Joe, as you look ahead for the Titans and you evaluate both sides of the ball, what do you think's more important to hit a home run on? Is it the next offensive coordinator and trying to do the best you can to keep this train moving, keep this elite offense at that level? Or is it more important to hit on the other side of the ball and try to get this defense to a place where you're at least average at that point and just let the chips fall where they may offensively? What do you think is the more important hire for Mike Vrabel?
I think if you're talking about more important to hit a home run, I think it's the offense. Because, look, with the defense, I'll always rank it this way. It's personnel issues first. It's the lack of coordinator, you know, the loss of Pease, the loss of Combs after that, okay? To me, again, this year, the Titans won 11-5 with a bad defense. With a defense that at times was, I think, bad is being gentle. So I think you obviously you want to do well with both hires, but it's the same thing to me. Can you get the defense to be okay? That's good enough as long as you are still great on offense. Like, to me, I would rather see the Titans maintain or build on this dominant side of the ball. And if you don't hit, quote unquote, hit a home run with your OC and you take a step back, you know, I mean, to me, you know, now there's just way more pressure and maybe unrealistic pressure on that defense. I think it's the same formula. You want to maintain what you're doing, have a great OC that can keep this going at 30, 31 points a game. And, you know, and the dominant rusher and one of the top, you know, what is Tannehill, 5 to 7 quarterbacks in the NFL. A lot of people wouldn't agree with that, but anyone who says he wasn't top 10 this year is crazy. A.J. Brown, and we don't know all the personnel, but you want that side of the ball to stay dominant. Then there's less pressure. You just get someone who's competent, get some players who can rush the passer, be okay on defense. What is that team? I think that's a team that could build on 11 wins, could win the AFC South again, could possibly make a run. I would rather hit that home run.
See, I would go the other way. I think it's more important to hit a home run defensively based on the personnel. Like, I don't know how different the personnel is going to look defensively next year and what sort of pieces they're going to bring in through either free agency or the draft. But I think it's fair to say there will still be some holes on that defense next year unless there's just like this complete overhaul that John Robinson is able to pull off this offseason with a salary cap that is not going to be going up for the NFL. So I think you've got to bring in and have a home run hire defensively to maximize what you've got on that side of the ball. And the reason I feel that way is this. I look at the offensive side, and with the talent that's there with Tannehill and Henry and A.J. Brown, we'll see what happens with Corey Davis. I feel pretty good, regardless of who the offensive coordinator is, that offense is going to come in and be pretty good again. Now, is it going to be elite again? I don't know. I mean, and that's obviously really important to answer, and that's an important factor of why the Titans got to where they got to this year. Without that elite offense, they're nowhere near 11-5 based on the defense that they had. But I feel good about the personnel there, and to be honest with you, I feel even better, like, recognizing that A.J. Brown was as hurt as he was yesterday. I was like, man, if he was that hurt and still found a way to get to 1,000 yards, what can he do next year if he's healthy? I mean, that to me is a big positive for the Titans, that he was able to be that productive while fighting through all the injuries that he was fighting through. So, honestly, regardless of who the offensive coordinator is, I feel pretty good about the chances of that offense coming back and being one of the upper echelon offenses in the NFL. That's not to take anything away from Arthur Smith, because I think what he was doing and the connection he had with Tannehill was pretty high-level stuff, and I think it's going to be difficult for anyone to replicate that. But I just think you need to maximize the other side of the ball as much as you can, because it was such a big problem this year that I'm not sure you can get all of it fixed from a personnel standpoint in one offseason. And because of that, I think you need to bring in a defensive coordinator that maximizes the ability on that team. I thought Dean Pease obviously did a good job of maximizing ability. And I'm not saying you got to bring in somebody like Dean Pease, but it's apparent that the abilities were not maximized last season. And if they are, it's not like Kevin Byard, I think, has just suddenly fallen off and forgotten how to be a good player. Like, it's not like Rashawn Evans doesn't have talent. I think there are still pieces on this defense. I think a good defensive coordinator with experience calling plays in key situations is key. And I think if that happens, this defense has a chance to get back to a level where maybe it's not great, maybe it's not even really good, but it at least doesn't get you killed week in and week out like they did this year.
See, I think there's plenty of people who could come in and screw this offense up for as many good pieces as are in place. I mean, I think maybe I look at this too. Maybe I look at these two coordinator spots like the game day, and I know anyone on the defensive side of the ball is going to scream at this and say, what are you talking about? But I just feel like the offensive coordinator on game day, the play calling, the plan, all that is so important. And I think I might put it above the D coordinator. I understand they're both very important. Also, I mean, I think some of this answer has to do with how you feel about Mike Vrabel, because Vrabel is a defensive guy, and I understand.
I don't feel great right now.
Not good. Well, yeah, no, I get it. I do. But I just, like, I think Mike Vrabel knows what he's doing and what he wants and how it should look. And I don't think they had guys who could do it. I agree with you that a Byard and an Evans are great examples of guys who, I mean, they did not play like they've been playing. So how do you not put that on coaching? I agree. I think you do. But I feel like with Vrabel's going to have a ton of influence on this defense. There's just no way Vrabel's going to bring a D coordinator and say, hey, it's your baby. I'm going to go out and smash some dudes in practice and, give a speech tonight and talk to the media every day. And we'll go like that. I mean, Vrabel's going to have his hands all over this defense anyway. So to me, it's more important to hit a home run on the side of the ball that you want to just pass off and say, please be great. It's not happening on the defensive side of the ball for Vrabel.
You mentioned that you think there are plenty of people that could come in and screw this offense up. Like, what do you mean by that? Like, what's an example of somebody coming in, and not a specific person, but what do you think a formula would be that screws this up? Obviously, outside of injury and things that we know we can't control or foresee.
Well, I'm just saying, I think that Arthur Smith deserves a ton of credit for how good they were, and look. When he went to Atlanta, there was a whole bunch of, oh, okay, great. So he had Derrick Henry and rides that to the head coaching job of the Falcons. I just think that's a fallacy. I think that his designs, his plans, his scripts, his in-game feel, setting things up, making everything look the same, all that stuff, the motions, I thought it was great. And if it was so easy that anybody could do it, then anybody would do it. So I think that you could absolutely take a big step back from that. How much does that hurt you? Do you still have this offensive line, that running back, this quarterback, those receivers? I mean, I think there's a certain floor to to this offense, where it's hard to imagine it wouldn't be at least pretty good. But I think Arthur Smith enhanced it and made it better. And he, all those people, think of all the people who had career years. And, of course, A.J. Brown's just very young in his career. He was great basically from the start. But career years under Arthur Smith, that's not a coincidence. So I guess when I say screw it up, I mean they could be way less effective than him.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, what if Vrabel just doubles down and doesn't name an offensive coordinator either? So Vrabel just taking full control. No coordinators needed.
I love it. Well, that's – I mean, based on his answer to me at the end there, I'm expecting the coaching staff to just be like, coach, you know. Just everybody just be called coach.
Nobody needs any titles.
We're all on one big team here, and we all just kind of, you know, maybe someone's a life coach, a yoga coach. You know, just we all just work together, and we don't need any titles. Why is the media making a big deal out of these titles?
Speaking of the Titans defense, a player that's going to be a big part of it next year and maybe moving forward did not have a good season when he returned to play finally. What do we make of the future of Adoree Jackson? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in every weekday morning on Preds Game Day at 8:45 this season for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Your next chance to participate is this Friday morning at 8:45, so make sure that you're tuning in for that. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us here in just a few minutes at 7:30, and we'll get into the craziness of Tennessee football with him. So looking forward to that conversation with Josh. But talking Titans right now, and Joe, a player that's going to be really important, I think, moving forward here is Adoree Jackson. And obviously this past season did not go the way that Adoree Jackson would have hoped. Injured for most of the season. Looked like he may have been coming back early on, maybe by week five, and then apparently had a setback somewhere along the way. I was out of practice for a few weeks, eventually found his way back in toward the end of the season, but just never looked like he was up to full speed and playing at his full high level. And Corey Curtis from News 2 joined us earlier this week and had some strong words about Adoree Jackson and what his future could look like here with the Tennessee Titans. Here's what Corey Curtis had to say.
Do I think, you know, they need to get rid of him? No, I don't. But when you're starting talking about paying guys $12, $13, $14, $15 million a year, you have to know that that guy's a pretty big-time player for you. And, you know, that gets to be a hard call. I mean, it does. Could you not draft another corner in the first round and feel just as good about it? He's not doing the return game for you, which is one of the things you drafted for him, drafted him to do in the first place, and that didn't work out. He has had very good stretches. He's also had some not so very good stretches, which makes this last year really tough because you would have liked to have seen a whole lot more of him. And, you know, look, he was off forever and then came back and tried to play, and it wasn't great, but I don't know if we expected great after being off so long. So I think it's a tough spot. I mean, because you don't like to let good players walk. But again, how much is somebody else willing to pay him? And are you willing to go that high?
So that was Corey Curtis from News 2. And Joe, it's interesting looking at Adoree Jackson, a first round pick. And I remember when he was selected, you know, a big part of the talking point was, yeah, we feel like he could be a really good cornerback in the NFL. But he's also a good return man in college, the punt return, kick return, anything you want to throw at him, he can handle. And obviously, that part of it has not worked out with the Titans. As you look at Adoree Jackson, where he was drafted, the expectations, and based on the highest level that you've seen him play, what do you think his future looks like with the Titans, and how much is he worth? I mean, this year he's going to be earning a base salary of around $10.2 million. What has he got to prove this next season to show the Titans that he's worth that?
Yeah, well, they picked up his option, and you know, obviously he was on his rookie deal. They picked up his option. I think it was good to pick up his option, the number 19 pick. Like you said, Robbie, you know, that was at the time viewed as a little bit high for him, but not when you consider his danger as a return man. And that ended up, you know, I remember the night last season when Vrabel finally was like, okay, someone else has got to go back there. I mean, that loss to Jacksonville and Minshew was largely traced to him fumbling a punt early in that game and giving them a freebie. And that never really materialized. He had a few good returns here and there, but that's out of the question. Now, I still think the question of Adoree's future, it's hard to just isolate him because it depends on other people too. I believe he'll be on this team next year. And I think that you got to look at this year and take it with the understanding that he worked all year from a knee injury. On a pretty obvious setback in the middle of working back to finally get on the field late, and he didn't look very good. But I mean, lots of players would probably not look their best in those circumstances. I think that he's a good player. I don't know that he'll ever be a great player based on what we've seen, but you could do a lot worse than Adoree Jackson at corner two. And if you had a healthy Adoree Jackson after a full off season, I think you'd feel pretty good about that spot and about paying a guy $10 million to do what he does. The question is, what's beyond that? I mean, are you looking to try to now, sign him to something long-term? Because you have Malcolm Butler over there on the other side. You have Christian Fulton, who you just drafted with a second-round pick, which is that's an investment that says this guy is going to be starting for us very soon. And obviously he had injuries this year. And then you also brought in Desmond King this year, and that was a good pickup, and he's a free agent, and you could look at, do you want to try to lock him up? I mean, you got to have four corners you feel good about, but you can't pay four corners.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. CJ from Pleasant View texts in and says, I think Adoree Jackson has the ability to be a good player. Coming off an injury that late in the season was hard for him to produce, but I believe in off-season staying healthy and working hard, he can be a great player next year. And look, I hear what you've said. I hear what CJ's thrown out there at the end of, you're injured all season long. It's difficult to expect you to come back in the lineup and be at your top level. And I get that. I fully understand that. But this is not a new conversation with Adoree Jackson. I mean, we even had conversations heading into the season before we knew that he was hurt about him and about how there needed to be another level that he reached. And I thought at times 2 years ago when the Titans were making their run to the AFC title game, Adoree Jackson was really good. I mean, he played lockdown coverage. Yes. He was running really well. I thought he was really coming into his own and starting to take that next step as a cover corner in this league. But I haven't seen enough of it yet to be convinced that that's what he is. And to Corey's point, it's unfortunate if you're the Titans that you didn't get a chance to see that this year, because I think this year would have gone a long way in telling us what Adoree Jackson is. Now, you also have to factor in the lack of pass rush, and it's impossible for anybody to sit back there and cover 12 seconds in the secondary. I think we established that all season long. But I do think, even with the injury aside, there was something for Adoree Jackson to prove next year, and I'm not convinced at this point that he is going to be like this guy that you can rely on at that position with the amount of money that he's going to command. And I'm interested to see next year if he is healthy, if he comes back, does he look more like the guy that he looked like towards the end of last season when they're making their run to the AFC title game, or is he still very, very inconsistent as a player? Because if he is, if there still is that inconsistency with him, I don't know how you can justify paying him eight figures at that point.
Right. Well, I agree. I think next year for him is going to be a prove it year for him, not just with this team, but with everybody. And it's one of those things where maybe six games in, if he does look like that guy, because I totally agree with you. I thought that he was taking it up a level in 2019 in the postseason. You know, remember they lost Malcolm Butler halfway through the 2019 season with an injury at, I think his wrist at Carolina.
Yep.
And, you know, they had other injuries. They had Tremaine Brock out there. Adoree Jackson held it down at that position, who I thought was really good. If he's that guy, you know, maybe it's like, okay, can something be done? Is it worth trying to lock him up? But if he looks more like we saw this year, then it may just be, know, his last year, and we'll see what he does in free agency. Again, it's also, you have to, what's the rest of the picture? What is the crew next year? I mean, I still think, you know, Butler to me is really interesting just because he's such a competitor. I thought he was really good this year. And he's also a guy with 2 years in, you know, $25 million left on his deal. Do you say, hey, you know what? It's Fulton time. Let's try to lock up King. We got Adoree for a year. Let's roll with that. I mean, maybe I can't imagine that we're going to see Butler and King next year. The most likely, right, obvious thing is King goes off into free agency and all that. But you got to feel really good about what you have in the slot. If you're like, hey, Fulton's going to be fine. He was hurt. He's going to have a full off season. He's going to be great there. Then there you go. And you're rolling with what I think could be a good corner crew. But I do think the Butler thing bears watching. Because that's just one of those moves, a guy who's 30, guy who's got a lot of money coming, that with the cap where it is, that could be one of your sacrifices to try to help yourself in other areas of the team.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing that you'd like to see more of from Adoree Jackson, look, I thought he played really well towards the end of the 2019 season. He's never been a guy that intercepts the ball. Like, he's never really been a guy that forces turnovers. He's got two interceptions in his entire career. Both of them came in 2018. So, look, I get it. Yeah, not everybody is just this turnover, takeaway monster out there at cornerback, but I do think, and Vrabel's talked about this before, you want to see more turnovers forced on defense, and that's, to me, next season, what I'd also like to see in terms of him taking a step is, all right, you can hang with him, you can run with guys, start taking the ball away. I mean, two picks for your entire career, that number to me is really low at this point for Adoree Jackson. You got to see a step forward in that area.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you can look at, I mean, some of the great corners over the years have had stretches where, because, you know, they're put in man a ton because they're so good.
Right.
And so they follow great receivers. And when you're in man, you're less likely to make interceptions because your back is turned to the quarterback. You're guarding your guy. You know, it's a lot easier to get picks if you're in a lot of zone looks. I mean, you know, Charles Woodson had stretches in his career where he had, you know, a pick and then a pick the next year and a pick. I mean, you know, I'm looking at a stretch of, like, with Oakland when he was in his prime, he had 1, 2, 3, 4. He had 7 over 5 years. You know, so it's not like he was – now, he also had years, like with the Packers, he had 9 one year.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, overall, the guy had 65 picks. But I'm just saying, sometimes if you are great at corner, it doesn't always show up in interceptions. But that's not – I mean, it's not like Adoree is such a lockdown guy that people aren't throwing at him, you know. So I agree. Make more plays. He's an okay tackler, but sometimes he leaves something to be desired there too. I mean, he can get better.
Yeah, and he's going to have to get better if you're the Titans, I think, to justify some faith in him long-term with the price tag that he could command moving forward. So a big year coming up for a lot of people on defense, but I think a lot, especially for Adoree Jackson, proving what his long-term worth may be. When we come back, we'll get back into the Tennessee Vols. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porath are with you on this Wednesday morning, talking all things Tennessee Volunteers and the craziness that has been this week in Knoxville. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Good morning, guys.
How attractive is this coaching job right now from the outside? We all know what's happened this week and then just what a mess it's been with the investigation. Pruitt is out, Fulmer retiring. If you're a coach that's maybe interested in this job at Tennessee, based on everything that's happened over the course of the past decade, how attractive of a job is this right now?
I think the Tennessee football coaching job is definitely a good job. It's one that's attractive because it pays well. It's a program that has a bunch of support. You get the resources that you need to succeed. But it's also a job that comes with, I think, very obvious challenges and more challenges than normal in the current situation because of the NCAA investigation and the unknown. What we know is that Tennessee is expecting penalties that will make the job harder. We just right now need to wait to find out how severe those will be. Right now, coaches out there are wondering who's going to be the athletic director as well, because that'll be the person most responsible for finding the next coach. But we've also seen in past coaching searches that while it's a good job and a lot of coaches have been interested, on occasion, coaches have been interested in getting a raise from Tennessee, and coaches have considered the job and come close to taking it but opted out, like Charlie Strong when he decided to stay at Louisville instead of go to Tennessee before Tennessee hired Butch Jones, and Will Muschamp decided he'd prefer to be the defensive coordinator at Texas instead of being the head coach at Tennessee. And at that time, he knew he was going to have big-time options, ultimately became the Florida coach. But other coaches have also said no for different reasons, and I think that's what probably scares Tennessee fans now, is that the job may be less attractive than it was then, and the timing right now to try to find a coach is not ideal, and all of that adds up to real concern, and that's why I think there's a real possibility that Kevin Steele could be the guy for this year, and then we'll see what Tennessee tries to do long term.
Really? So you are leaning on the side of maybe Steele gets it for a year. And would you characterize that as a, like, basically a tryout year, or just a hold the fort down so we can get everything figured out for a great search year?
Well, it could be both. And I don't know that I lean that way yet. I still want to see who Tennessee hires as an athletic director, and maybe more importantly than that, when Tennessee hires an AD. If Tennessee can get it done in the next week and a half or two, then it makes it, to me, more realistic that Tennessee can go find a coach if it's trying to find a coach who is currently at another school, as opposed to if we're having this conversation into February and coaches out there are making plans for what they're going to be doing in the spring. It's that to me is part of the issue, is the timing. Remember when Tennessee had to replace Lane Kiffin? Well, that was more than a week before the point we're at now, having this conversation. And that timing was not good for Tennessee. So I don't know that I lean Kevin Steele. I just think that that's a realistic scenario that they will consider. And if he is the coach for 2021, my first guess would be that it's to hold the fort down, and they will conduct a real coaching search to try to go find a coach, and they'll have more candidates to consider. They'll also have more competition. Currently, there's none, essentially, right? But at some point in 2021, there will be more coaches fired, and at the end of the season, schools will be conducting searches. And if Tennessee goes down that road and doesn't like what it's seen and is comfortable with Kevin Steele, maybe he ultimately gets the job. He almost did in 2017. The difference now is that there will be somebody besides Philip Fulmer making the hire. So I don't know. Right now, I think it would be foolish to rule out too many scenarios when it comes to what Tennessee could do.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh, we've already seen a lot of player movement this offseason while Fulmer and Pruitt were in place. Now that that is no longer the case, how concerned should Tennessee fans be about more player movement into the transfer portal? We've heard rumors about To'o To'o and Eric Gray. How concerned should Tennessee fans be about that here in the immediate future?
Yeah, I would say very concerned. I think that's priority number one for Kevin Steele and the coaches, and maybe Philip Fulmer, is trying to calm some players down and convince them to stay. But that's now, and that's in the summer. If they convince them to stay now, that doesn't mean they will in May or June. They could ultimately still decide to leave at the end of the semester and go somewhere else. We saw Big Cat Bryant delete his tweet. That obviously raises some concern about him actually transferring to Tennessee, and he was going to be one of Tennessee's best players as a transfer from Auburn, but Shelton Felton was a big part of that. Shelton Felton is no longer at Tennessee. 247 Sports had the report that Dylan Brooks has asked out of his letter of intent that he signed with Tennessee. That's not good. He was the highest-rated signee in the class. So incoming players, players that are currently on the roster, players that publicly expressed appreciation and support for Jeremy Pruitt as he was being fired, of course, that's a concern. It doesn't mean that everybody's going to leave, but I think it was already something that Tennessee was dealing with in trying to convince players to stay, and then they saw the change this past week, and they see some real concern and just great unknown with the future of the program. And that is going to cause players to consider their options.
You buy this McDonald's business, Josh?
Well, you really can't come up with a story that's unbelievable when it comes to Tennessee. And that's, you know, that's maybe part of the issue. And in some ways, Tennessee has become meme you over the last few years. It used to be wide receiver you and running back you and DB you, but it's meme you because they give the internet so much to work with. And yeah, maybe this story is not true, but there's a reason Mark Stoops said what he did on Tuesday, that he wasn't surprised to see what happened on Monday, and that's why the McDonald story becomes believable and Florida's official account celebrating the basketball win can tweet out, "We're loving it," and everybody can have fun and get Jeremy Pruitt's face on Ronald McDonald, which scares all of us, but still gives so many people out there a good laugh. And that's been Tennessee football for quite some time. It's like everybody out there who's creative is just waiting on the next story to come out with Tennessee so they can get hits on the internet, because it's just cheap, easy material that's coming their way.
Josh, obviously Philip Fulmer is a beloved figure in Knoxville based on his coaching days and the success that they had with him in charge of that football program. As you look at him now, you know, obviously it didn't end well from his coaching tenure, and then you move on and become the athletics director and the debacle that has been Jeremy Pruitt. What do you think Philip Fulmer's legacy is at Tennessee, and how much, if at all, do you think that this affects that legacy?
Yeah, I think you can find different answers from different Tennessee fans on that. I think overall, Philip Fulmer's legacy will be appreciation for what he's done for Tennessee. Obviously, as a football coach, he had tremendous success with the championships, the national title, and a bunch of wins. And for pretty much anybody that I know that has seen Tennessee football succeed, the best football they've ever seen and maybe will ever see was with Philip Fulmer as the head coach. Obviously, the athletic director tenure did not go how he wanted and how anybody at Tennessee wanted. While there were some bright spots in the athletic department, other sports are in very good shape. He was hired to fix football, and he's leaving football in a complete mess. And at the press conference on Monday, I thought it was odd, some of the things that were said, but I think the reason was pretty obvious, and that was because they didn't want Philip Fulmer to leave Tennessee looking bad again. So that's why Randy Boyd and Donnie Plowman said the things that they did at the press conference. I didn't think that was the time or the place to be doing that, but that's the reason, because I think they wanted to soften the blow with him leaving Tennessee again.
So, you know, normally at the end of these segments, Josh, we're talking all this awful football misery, and then it's like, but hey, on the bright side, how about that basketball team? Pretty bad last night, but I know that you are someone with a very even-keeled approach and good perspective. Are you concerned after what you saw last night?
I'm not overly concerned. Last night was a concerning performance, but I'm still a believer in what this Tennessee basketball team is. I think one thing was confirmed. Tennessee needs Jaden Springer. He's going to play an important role. The two worst performances for Tennessee have come with him being unavailable. And Tennessee was affected by that last night. Now, Tennessee is a team with tremendous depth, talent, athleticism, and it should not be affected the way it appeared to be without Jaden Springer. And that's just one player, and that's just one reason Tennessee played that way. The effort was concerning, and Rick Barnes was rightfully upset after the game with the way the team played. And maybe I'll sound like a Pollyanna right now, but I still think this is a really good basketball team. I think it's one of the best teams in the SEC. The best team in the SEC right now is Alabama. I don't think there's any question about that. Ooh. But I still think that as the season goes along, this is a good team. I think they're going to get better. I think that they have the right kind of cultural fit with these players to understand how they need to respond. But that wasn't the defense that Tennessee's capable of playing. They should be better offensively. And if they don't hit shots, they're probably going to look like a bad basketball team. So that will still be a concern moving forward. But overall, I think Tennessee is one of the top two to three teams in the SEC and should be a team that can go deep into the NCAA tournament. But the expectations aren't going to change. So if Tennessee doesn't do that at the end of the season, then this season will ultimately look like a disappointment. So let's see how Tennessee responds. They're going to be challenged by Missouri. I know that was an easy game for Tennessee the last time. It may not be this week, and Missouri is going to be very motivated. So Tennessee will be challenged by Rick Barnes and the coaching staff the next couple of days. We'll see on Saturday how the players respond. My guess is that they respond well.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Josh, great stuff. Appreciate you taking time to join us, and we'll see where this soap opera that is Tennessee football takes us over the next couple of weeks.
Everybody is watching and waiting to see. I appreciate it, guys.
Absolutely. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. When we come back, we have some breaking news in the AFC South regarding a quarterback. Man, how different could this division look next year? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville for joining us in the last segment. Certainly going to be very interesting to keep an eye on Tennessee football over the next couple of weeks. But Joe, we've got some breaking news in the AFC South. Philip Rivers has announced that he is retiring from the NFL after 17 seasons. Plays 1 year with the Indianapolis Colts. They go out in the playoffs against the Buffalo Bills, and Philip Rivers will not be coming back. He's announced his retirement, this coming in a story from Kevin Acey with the San Diego Union-Tribune. And Rivers going to fulfill his lifelong dream of coaching high school football in Alabama. So Philip Rivers will not be coming back to the NFL next year, will not be coming back to the Indianapolis Colts. He has retired after 17 seasons.
Not shocking, but I thought maybe there'd be one more run back with him and with the Colts going with him. But now, Chris Ballard, there you go. The choice is made for you. You got to find a quarterback.
And it's amazing to think about, like, what the quarterback situation looked like to start this season with Rivers in Indy, Tannehill in Tennessee, Deshaun Watson in Houston, Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville, and to think about what it could potentially look like next year. Who knows what the Colts are going to do at quarterback? Is Deshaun Watson going to be in Houston? Is he still going to be a member of that organization? Trevor Lawrence, you would assume, coming into the fold with Jacksonville and Urban Meyer, and then Tannehill, maybe the lone holdover as quarterback in the AFC South. We'll see what happens with Deshaun Watson, but the quarterback turnover, or at least the potential of it in this division, pretty intriguing when you look at it in the AFC South.
If you are a Titans fan, and really, you know, if you're a fan of an AFC team or AFC South team, two names come to mind in terms of, you know, potential trade pieces from teams that have good quarterbacks, but maybe are looking to, you know, get younger and just start over there. One would be Arthur Smith's new team, Matt Ryan, and one would be those legendary, lovable Lions.
Yeah.
At Matthew Stafford. And I'll tell you what, either of those guys on that team, I think would be quite scary. I think especially Stafford. You know, Matt Ryan, I think is, and they're similar age. I think Matt Ryan's maybe a couple years older, a year or two older than Matt Stafford. You know, he's a little bit all over the map more. I think Stafford with that team, ooh, it could be scary, man. So, I mean, to me, if I'm the Colts, I'm looking at that. I know everybody's focused on Watson, like, you know,
yeah,
let's bundle eight players and four first-round picks and get Watson. But I think those are two realistic transactions that could really make that a heck of a football team.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the roster the Colts have, and I think you like a lot about that roster. Obviously, the defense, they've got some great pieces. I thought they had some development this year at wide receiver, even though you couldn't really throw the ball down the field probably as much as you'd like with Philip Rivers. You know, you bring a guy like Stafford who can make every throw in the league into that offense. And to your point, Stafford only 32 years old now. He's got some wear and tear. He's been hit a lot. He's dealt with a lot of injuries and has shown that he can play through a lot of injuries. But you bring a guy like that into this offense with the arm he brings to the table. If I'm a Titans fan, I would be terrified about a guy like Stafford coming into the fold. Even Matt Ryan, he could still push the ball down the field. It's just I look at that Colts roster right now, and they would be so dangerous with a good starting quarterback. And, you know, Ballard has talked about, you know, everybody wants you to just go draft this franchise guy. And he made it pretty clear last week that, yeah, you know, I want to have a franchise quarterback as well, but I'm not going to draft a guy just for the sake of drafting a guy to try to get the quarterback. So I'm very fascinated to see how they handle this draft, if they go about drafting a quarterback that way, or maybe you do go the trade route. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how the Colts handle this, because you bring a good quarterback into that mix and a quarterback that can push the ball down the field, and I think they immediately become the favorite in the AFC South.
Yeah, now, of course, what we don't know is then what goes back the other way. You would think some draft capital, but maybe also some players. And how do you make it fit, in terms of the salary cap? I'm trying to remember what Rivers made this year. Did Rivers make 30 this year? I think he was right around there.
Yeah, I think around there.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Matt Ryan's at a $40 million clip, isn't he? I think so. I mean, you know, you'd have to – make some things work out. But basically, I mean, you already were carrying a quarterback at a high salary, and you still have that roster. So So it's just a question of what you have to give up. You would think that that would still be a pretty intact roster. I think one thing they have to do for whoever their quarterback is, they've got to continue to add at receiver. I think Pittman showed some things this year that he's going to be a nice player, but they need more. I mean, T.Y. Hilton is just about done, but if they can find a difference maker there to go with everything else they have, yeah, that's an awfully scary football team. You know, because I think Jonathan Taylor started coming to his own, and you can see he might be a really good back for many years to come in this league.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, the Colts are 13-3 with Stafford at the helm based on the roster that they have. I mean, 13-3 is a high bar, but, I mean, you went 11-5 this year with Phillip Rivers. I think 13-3, 14-2, absolutely on the table, depending on what goes back. I mean, I know, look, I think a lot of people view Matt Stafford as a guy that's not a good quarterback just based on where he is in Detroit and the lack of success that they've had in terms of wins and losses. But I think if you actually watch that guy play, you know he's very good. I mean, he can make every throw. Aaron Rodgers raves about that guy all the time and just the throws that he's making. You talk about Mahomes and the no-look passes. I mean, Matt Stafford's been doing that for 12 years. So a guy that's very talented and – man, if I'm a Titans fan, I am paying very close attention to what the Indianapolis Colts do at the quarterback position. And, you know, look, you're looking around the rest of the league right now, and Deshaun Watson, we'll see what happens with him. But if the Colts get a good quarterback, are they the second-best team in the AFC behind Kansas City? I think you can make an argument.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, no, you can definitely make that argument. And as far as Stafford, yeah, he throws the head-scratching pick probably a little bit too often, but he's also, again, he plays for the freaking Lions. I mean, you have to put everything through that lens. I would say, like, arm talent, I'm not sure. I think I might rank arm talent. I might have a top three of Rodgers, Mahomes, and Stafford, just arm talent. I mean, it's extraordinary. So you think about that, and then think about what we saw from Rivers this year. Smart guy, great pre-snap. He'll dink you to death, but, I mean, you're totally changing what you can do offensively if you put in Stafford.
Well, and keep this in mind, too. Not only do you have Rivers and his money coming off the books if you're the Colts, but also you've got Jacoby Brissett coming off the books as well. He was signed, he had a $21 million cap hit this past year, and now he's going to be a free agent as well. So all of a sudden, they had some good cap space anyway. All of a sudden, a whole lot of room freed up for the Colts in the salary cap.
No, that's a great point. That is a great – it's amazing that you could have that much locked up into two QBs and still have all the good players that they have. And that's a organization. I mean, Chris Ballard's done a really good job. He has drafted really well, and that's a big key. And that's what you have to do. I mean, you can't have empty drafts in this league. And if you have drafts full of hits, that's how you can have teams like this – and still not be on like a rookie quarterback deal and still be very good.
So what is Phillip Rivers' legacy in the NFL? You look at the numbers. I mean, he's going to be right near the top of the list in a lot of categories. Passing yards, I think he was fifth all time in yards. He's got a lot of touchdowns. Obviously, a lot of very successful years in San Diego. What do you think Phillip Rivers' legacy is now that he's officially decided to hang it up?
I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think his legacy is going to be that he wasn't quite as good as the greatest guys in his era. I'm trying to think of a comp to that. You know, like you go back to like Marino, Elway, Montana. You know, who was right under those guys? Boomer Esiason. You know, yeah. I'd have to think about it. Bernie Kosar. You know, actually, Bernie Kosar is not a bad comparison to Phillip Rivers. They both throw like a – you know, like Uncle Rico. His legacy is, you know, in part that he came up small in a lot of big moments. But at the same time, was a great quarterback. You know, the interesting thing with him is his legacy is always going to be tied to Drew Brees as well. I'd love to know a full poll of Chargers fans and whether they wish they could go back to 2005 and never lose Drew Brees and just have him this whole time instead of Phillip Rivers. You know, I mean, Drew Brees won one Super Bowl. Phillip Rivers didn't get one. I'd love to know the results of that. I think a lot of Chargers fans love Phillip Rivers. I mean, he was a great quarterback, but was he as good as Drew Brees? I'd say a tick below him.
I would agree with that as well. And, like, you know, what does it look like if Eli Manning doesn't throw a fit about going to San Diego as well? I mean, you think back to that draft.
And
going to the Chargers. So, like, what does Phillip Rivers' legacy look like if he's somewhere else? I mean, there's a whole lot of decisions made that had really nothing to do with Phillip Rivers that I think influenced, obviously, him being in San Diego, but just his legacy overall. It's interesting to go back and look that way, both with Drew Brees and Eli Manning.
And it's interesting that, I mean, this, I guess today is the Phillip Legacy Show.
Yeah, exactly.
We had no idea that it would be, but apparently that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, we're
going
to transition from one Phillip to another Phillip, and we talked to Josh Ward a little bit about it in the last segment. What is Phillip Fulmer's legacy with the Tennessee Volunteers, and how much does the news of the week affect that legacy moving forward with Tennessee fans? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.